This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
And welcome to this, another edition of Terror Tuesdays here at the Cinema Recall Podcast, only at thatmomentin.com. I am your host, The Vern, and for the next several minutes, I am going to be taking a look at the sci-fi thriller, The Infinity Chamber. Now, this was written and directed by Travis Malloy, and it features in the cast Christopher Soren Kelly, Cassandra Clark, and Jesse D. Arrow. The story is about a man who is wrongfully imprisoned to an automated cell. With only an AI unit as his only friend and means of support, our hero must repeat the same series of events over and over again until he finds a way to escape. Now, being accused of a crime you didn't commit is pretty scary. Being trapped in a cell where the only thing you have to communicate with is a computer program can also be pretty scary. I have sort of a slight fear of enclosed spaces, so this is a little terrifying for me. That's why it's on the show. So let's go ahead and listen to a small trailer, and then I'll be back with my thoughts, all right?
Good morning, Frank.
I don't know what you think I've done. You think I am, but it's a mistake.
You can call me Howard.
You can't keep me here without telling me why. I have rights. At least the right to know why I was brought here.
I don't have that information.
What do you know?
I know my job.
And what would that be?
I'm here to keep you alive, Frank.
Look, this isn't what you think. We're in a place from the past that doesn't even exist anymore.
You're gonna figure this out, okay? No matter how long it takes.
The memory stays the same, but the entry point is different.
Where does that leave us?
Someone will be coming.
You have to let me out of this room.
I'm not authorized to do that.
You're not authorized to let me die.
Please stop.
What is your job, Howard?
I can't do that, Frank.
What is your job?
To keep you alive.
Then open the goddamn door!
Frank, wake up!
Should we get started?
So, writer and director Travis Malloy wrote the script after reading about an automated prison. With our heavy reliance on internet and everything becoming readily available, this concept isn't far from reality. I mean, we can buy most everything without needing an actual person. Most of our food will be made without the need for humans. So who's to say we would not have an automated system to quickly evoke justice? I know it will be a long time, but it can still be plausible. Now, this movie, The Infinity Chamber, right from when the film opens till when it ends, we are seeing everything from our lead character's perspective. If you are confused as to why our lead character was arrested and put into this jail cell, it's okay because so is he. When the story begins to show flashbacks in his life, I really thought that we would get like a slow reveal as to why he was captured, not having any idea that this would go through a repeated structure, putting you, the viewer, into the same confused mind space as our hero. Now, telling a story that is set in just a few locations with basically one cast member is quite a challenging feat, but Christopher Soren Kelly, who plays the lead role of Frank, he delivers majorly in this. I really enjoyed and I praised his performance. I really liked that the character of Frank slowly becomes unhinged as the story progresses, instead of making him act all crazy from the start. It would have been really easy to show this character right away, trashing everything in the cell and yelling and screaming, and I'm glad that holds back on this, letting you see his frustration and seeing him try to work things out and having it backfire on him and getting small frustrated but not losing it. Yeah, it's a very nuanced performance, but it's excellent. A good protagonist is only as good as his antagonist, and the Infinity Chamber has a good one with Howard, played by Jesse D. Errol. Now, Howard is this computer program who is there to make sure our lead stays alive, feeding him a series of nutrients and playing him music. There were moments in the performance of Howard that made me think that he was an actual live human being, and then there were others where it felt like he was becoming an actual being who is aware of his environment, making him more alive than before. Also in his memory, Frank keeps visiting this coffee shop and has a visit with this waitress named Gabby, played by Cassandra Clark. Now, she is a key character because she is the last person Frank communicates with before he is captured. As the movie progresses, my opinions of this character varied. She is someone that I wanted to trust and hopefully help our hero escape, but since this is all memories that the cell is showing him, it becomes more and more difficult to decipher if she is there to actually help or not. There is one moment when it seems like both Howard and Gabby have the same voice, so I really kind of thought that they were both the same person. The whole repeated sequence here, it works good in the context of the story because memories are something that can be manipulated. What Frank sees as a wrongful imprisonment may not be correct, but since we are seeing everything from his perspective, it's hard to judge what is false and what is true. And before anyone says it first, this is not a ripoff of Groundhog Day, Edge of Tomorrow, Happy Death Day, etc., etc. The reason why it is not is because in those movies, that repeated element was used as the main plot of the story. In the Infinity Chamber, it's used more as an accessory. Let me explain. In Run Lola Run, the main plot is about this girl who needs to get money to her boyfriend before the gangsters do. Showing her repeat the same events again and again is not what the story is about. Do you see my point? Plus, this is a movie that rewards from multiple viewings because each time the memory is shown, we get new bits of information. With like Groundhog Day, you really don't need to see the movie over and over again to get hidden details of it, alright? If I had to nitpick anything from this movie, and it's a really small nitpick at that, the Infinity Chamber at times runs a little too long. Trim back a few of the moments of Frank with Gabby, and it would be a perfect length. Now, I'm not saying remove the whole scene, because their chemistry together, and I'm talking about Cassandra Clark and Christopher Soren Kelly, I think they have great chemistry together, but I would still say just trim back just a few of those moments right there. The Infinity Chamber is a very well acted, very well scripted, very well directed movie. I gotta give it 4 out of 5 stars. I like movies that are set in one environment. I think these are the movies that really show what an actor can do with their material. And so, yeah, I gotta give this one 4 out of 5 stars. Really kind of enjoyable thriller. It's kind of difficult. It's hard for me to really tell you too much about it because I don't want to spoil anything. But I think what we're going to do right now, to make things easier on everybody, is we're going to take a small break. And I'm going to play a few ads, and then I'm going to be back with the writer and director of the Infinity Chamber, Travis Malloy, to help explain things a little bit more, all right? So yeah, we'll be right back, all right?
We'll return after these messages.
Hello everyone, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Each week we review
the latest from Hollywood, California.
Well, yes, Brendan. We also
give top 3 lists.
Okay, yeah, thanks again, Brendan. Additionally, you can hear us
talk other movie news, trailers, varying movie series, or other interesting film-related topics, and even rants and raves of the week.
That's correct, Brendan. On top of our main show, every Friday
you can also hear our extra film podcasts.
Good job, Brendan.
Thank you, JD. It's my goal to make you proud. You're the father, after all.
Yes, and I'm very proud. You can listen to the In Session Film podcast on
iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or at InSessionFilm.com.
Brendan, will you please let me complete just one?
Nope.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Listen to the In Session Film podcast every Monday and Friday. Subscribe today and hear me verbally beat JD like a Cherokee drum.
No. That's not how this works, sir.
Hey,
no.
Go cry at Midnight Special again, okay? Okay? That's what you're good for.
I will. You know what? And I'll do it while pummeling you. I'll do both at the same time.
How are you going to pummel me? Yeah, I don't buy
that. That's just how it works. Go blue.
Hey, this is Adam Nutter.
And this is Greg Trout. Come check out our podcast, Nerds with Words. Adam and I talk about pop culture, comedy, comic books, movies, conspiracies. We're both comedians, and we might make you laugh. Every week, we welcome a guest from the entire spectrum of pop culture and science and comedy. You can follow us on Twitter at NerdsWithWords1.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Cinema Recall Podcast here at ThatMomentIn.com. Hope you enjoyed that break and you heard some great ads from some other podcast shows. Now, like I said before during my review, that Infinity Chamber is a complicated movie that needs to be seen more than once. To help me explain some things about this movie, we actually have with us the film's writer and director. Joining us on the show is Travis Malloy. Hello, Travis.
Hey, Laverne, how you doing?
Doing good, sir. Hey, thank you so much for being on the show here to talk about this really intense, really great, complicated sci-fi flick, Infinity Chamber.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Now, first thing I want to ask you about is where did you find your cast members? I mean, like, Christopher Sorrentelli,
yeah.
Jesse Earl, where'd you find these cats?
You know what? It all starts with Chris. I met Chris. We actually met at an audition for a different project, and he auditioned for something. I just thought he was amazing, so I always wanted to work with him, and so we became friends. And it was a few years later when I talked to him about this project, and once he came on board, that's really what got the ball rolling. I knew that it was going to be mainly one actor by himself for a long time, so I really needed somebody that was very interesting to watch, and I think he had that quality. So he's the one who kicked off the whole project, and then Jesse was actually a friend of Chris's, so he came on board to provide the voice of Howard. So yeah, that's how it all got started. It was mainly Chris.
Before you actually started shooting this, did you have like some sort of like audition process, or not audition process? But did you have some sort of like script reading, or did you put these guys into like a small environment to get them like inspired for the roles or anything like that?
You know what? Not really. It was because me and Chris, we were working on the project together. I mean, we discussed it before I even wrote the script. So he was involved from the start. And once I wrote the script and he was interested that he wanted to do it, we really took it from there because, you know, if you remember from the movie, most, you know, 70% of the movie is basically Chris by himself. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like actors getting together and going through the script. It was really just me and Chris from the beginning.
Really?
So
the scenes when he's actually talking with Howard, you know, played by Jesse Darrow, was Jesse there on the phone with him with those scenes there, or was it that just you and him?
Well, actually, what's interesting is I didn't know who was going to do the voice of Howard, and I knew that was going to be tricky because, you know, providing a voice for an AI, it's amazing how different people's voices, what kind of effect that would have on the character. So I planned on shooting the whole movie and then finding the right actor to come in and provide the voice. So it was kind of an afterthought. Well, while we filmed the movie, Chris had his friend Jesse come and just sit off camera and provide the voice. So it would give him somebody to interact with. So while we shot the whole movie, I didn't know Jesse was going to be the voice. He just was kind of helping us out through the production. Well, when we got finished, and I was editing the movie, then I started listening to all these voice actors, and I must have listened to 100 different people. And I would basically take their voices samples and I would lay it into the movie, and I just couldn't find the right voice. And I just kept hearing Jesse's voice. And as I so ironically, I had this huge search for the voice of Howard when Howard was standing next to me the whole time, that it was Jesse in the end that I ended up wanting to go with.
I like that. That's great. Sometimes, you know, you just have your friends come in to help you out there. They end up being a big part of the movie there. And I think that Jesse Darrow does a wonderful job with the role of Harold there. Howard. Now, the other key cast member in this is Cassandra Clark, who plays Gabby. Where did you find her?
Now, she was really the only person that I got through an actual audition call. In looking for our Gabby, we put out, you know, we put out announcements and we had actresses come in. So we held official auditions for that. And we must have met maybe 50, 60, 70 different actresses. And she right away, there was just something really genuine about her. So right away, I knew she was right for the part just because of the way she read, to me, it's really, when you're casting, you're really trying to find the person that is that person. So it's not so much really even the read, it's getting to know them and talking to them. And just talking to Cassandra, I was like, this is the right person to play this part. So that's how we got her.
Definitely. Now, the majority of the film is set in this cell. Can you tell me who helped design that cell?
Well, that was me, actually. I decided what was interesting about this project was it was a very low budget project, and I knew that the thing about indie filmmaking is it's really easy to procrastinate. It's really easy to say, you know what, now's not the right time, when I have more money, when it's better planned, when we're this, when we're that. So what I did is I purposely painted myself in a corner. I started building the set before I even had the script. I rented a space and I went in and I just kind of laid out the design, and I just literally started building the set while I was writing the script. That way, after a few months, I'd spent enough time and energy and money into this project that it would be foolish not to make the movie. So I purposely did that to myself so that I knew I would make the movie, because I didn't want anything to make me change my mind about it. So I spent almost a year building that set, and I tried lots of different things for looks and for the aesthetic of it. I had people come in and give me their opinion. I worked with a production designer named Tom Duffield, who came in and just gave me advice and things like that. But basically that set was just put together with stuff I found in salvage yards and dumpsters. That was the big obstacle of the movie's production. So it took a year to build, and I had to tear it down in 18 hours.
Oh, jeez. Oh, that's going to be heartbreaking. You spent the year of your life putting this thing together. Oh, God. Oh, man.
Yeah.
But it's an incredible job. I'm like, my hat's off to you to design the whole thing there.
Thank you.
Now, your last film, Pandorum, was directed by another person.
Yeah.
Why did you want to direct this one yourself?
Well, you know, because Pandorum was a bigger kind of studio film. That was when I was really just working as a screenwriter in Hollywood. So my agent, was going out and selling my projects, and that movie. Then Christian Elbert came on board to direct. So I was really only a writer on that project. And then I decided to go back into indie filmmaking and direct something myself. So that's why I chose, and that's specifically why I chose Infinity Chamber. I wanted a movie that was really easy to do, was self-contained, something that I could do on a limited budget.
Okay. Fair enough there. The Infinity Chamber, it was once called, I hope I'm saying this right, Somnio?
Yeah, Somnio.
Now, why did you change the title?
Well, that was something the distributor wanted, and I wasn't surprised. Somnio, it was just a little bit more of an abstract title, you know. It doesn't really say what it's about. It just so I kind of knew we would probably be changing the title. I wasn't surprised that they requested it. And the funny thing is, we were so used to that name. We lived with it for so long. So a lot of the people that were involved with the movie were kind of upset, like, oh, we can't change the title. And I was like, yeah, no, it's okay. I think it'll help the movie reach a bigger audience, because when you're looking on, you know, you're online, you're looking at movies, Infinity Chamber, I think, just resonated a little bit better with the project. So it wasn't too hard to do for me to change the title.
Now, is the website still somnio.com, or is it infinitychamber.com? Because
you know what? There's actually two. We did have a website. I think it was somniothemovie.com, but then we also built a new site, infinitychamber.com. So we built a new site for the title.
Okay. Because I figured the whole Somnio thing can still be played somewhere for, like, advertisements.
Oh, yeah. No, it – No, we just moved on. That's for
okay.
Sure.
Fair enough, man. All right, so I have you on the show here to help us out with some stuff that's going on in this movie, because this
sure.
movie is a little complicated here, right? Not super complicated. All right, so
yeah.
my first little question for you, and this is small, this is not a super spoiler, the central idea of automated prisons and justice systems is scary. Do you see this actually becoming a real thing?
In a sense, yeah. I mean, I think that was really the story that I was going after, was our connection, our obsession and connection with technology and how that's going to change society. I saw a news article. What inspired the story was I saw a story about prisons becoming automated. They were doing it to save costs and cut down on personnel, so there would be less guards and things like that. And I thought, wow, that's a really fascinating idea, is what happens if it went too far, if everything became automated and then something went wrong. So that was really the spark of the idea. But yeah, I just think it's a really interesting time that we're living in. How technology and devices are filtering or replacing our relationships. So I was really exploring what happens to the human condition when all you have left is an artificial relationship.
And
so that was the main drive of it.
Yeah, because I see that happening, you know, like the automatic Uber drivers, and soon there's going to be like fast food restaurants that don't need workers there because everything will be done with computers. So yeah, I can totally see something like this happening in the near future, where there won't be any needs for prison guards anymore because everything will just be done through an automated system there. It is kind of scary if something goes wrong, like it does
right.
in this movie, you know, people can be seriously hurt or injured there.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
There's one sequence in there in the beginning of this movie, and I'm great into spoilers for folks, so if you've never seen this movie before, go watch it, though, because we're going to get into spoilers here, all right? So,
right on.
Now, in the beginning of the movie, there's a scene where you shot the control panel from the POV of someone looking at the control panel.
Yes.
Now, was this to make us think that Howard was a real person or not? Was this to play with our minds or not? Am I just reading into this?
No, you're absolutely right, man. You're absolutely right. That was intended to do that. I wanted to – it was interesting. It was hard to know how long I could take that mystery. And in the end, it wasn't really that much of a mystery at all that whether Howard was artificial or not. So originally the idea was a lot stronger in the script, that Frank was talking to someone he thought was a person, was a guard in another room watching him on a monitor. So I wanted to establish that and give Howard enough personality and things with his inflection that, okay, he's talking to a person. And then the first shocker of the movie would be him realizing he's talking to a computer. So it was built on that, but once I got into the editing process and I was going reworking the story and going through, I was like, you know what, that surprise isn't that big of a surprise. I think we kind of all see that coming.
Okay.
So then I kind of pulled off on it. But you're absolutely right. That was established for that.
All right. So there is a sequence after the power goes off. Frank meets another prisoner called Fletcher May. He's played by Kadarjo Lindsay.
Yeah, Kadarjo Lindsay. Yep.
That's right. There. And Fletcher tells him that altering different elements from his memories can be used as like some sort of like entry points. What did he mean by that?
Well, that was basically once Frank is put into this prison, he's also interrogated by this device, this machine that's in the prison cell with him, that basically forces him to relive the day of his arrest. Because the government is looking for a piece of information, so that device that Frank kind of falls prey to, becomes a prisoner of, that becomes like the central device of the movie, of him trying to figure out what went wrong and why he was apprehended. And Fletcher's discussion with him is about how to beat that device. That there's a way to beat. It's like beating a lie detector.
Okay.
That you can change your entry point of your memory, that you can alter those facts. So it's kind of setting up the MacGuffin of the story of how to beat the system and how to possibly find a way out.
Gotcha. Now, I need to ask you this because you wrote the screenplay. Do you think – was Frank responsible for the bombs going off and then the power being cut in the building? Because he has that one key device right there in the beginning, and I thought that was the device that was used for the explosions in the middle of this movie.
Right. Well, he was part of – I mean, it's a little bit of a spoiler for the movie, just to warn anybody. But he was part of the revolution against technology and against the government. So he was – he didn't cause those events that happened while he was in prison necessarily. That was kind of an ongoing, but to answer your question, he wasn't responsible for the events that happened while he was in prison. No. Oh,
because I really thought that was like an earlier memory, because the whole thing is about his memories and he keeps repeating his memory. I thought that was just one element that he was going to keep hidden, you know, because everything's done from his perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he feels wrongfully imprisoned, maybe there was something else in his memory he didn't want to admit to. So when I saw the scenes of buildings being exploded, I thought that he was the one that was causing it, which caused the prison to go out of power.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, no, that to me, well, I mean, you can take it however you like, but for me, that was the two worlds kind of overlapping, because he was making a plan to escape, and when the whole system went haywire and started shutting down. So it was kind of a cross. It was like cross lapping between those two worlds of what he was envisioning and what was actually happening to him in the prison.
All right. Now, throughout this movie, whenever Frank goes to visit Gabby, there were certain times when I really thought Gabby was another version of Howard, especially at the very end when we see that dome. When we see that dome on the ceiling right there, I really thought that she would just be another version. Especially in that one moment though, where it feels like the audio of both Gabby and Howard are missing together.
Yes,
was that also intentional, or am I just reading into that too much?
No, you're hitting the points right on. You paid attention, that's for sure. That was definitely, I mean, you have to remember, to me, this is a movie about artificial relationships. He has a relationship with Howard, and he also forms a relationship with Gabby, but she's not an actual person, because he starts to manipulate his memory of that day. He did meet her They had a small encounter before he was arrested, but the more he went back into that memory, he started to change that and manipulate it. So she basically became his alter ego, somebody to talk to about the situation. So she did start to take on that same form of Howard. And actually, if you look really close, the way she speaks and the way Howard speaks is very similar. They have some of the same responses to some of his questions and to some of his statements. So I was definitely trying to overlap those two to make them almost the same in a way, even though they're very different kinds of relationships, but that they serve the same purpose, whether they were supporting him on his quest or were hindering it. So, that's really cool. That's really cool that you picked up on that.
Yeah, but what I like about this movie is a lot is that it's one of those movies there that you kind of want to see multiple times, just like how the main character, Frank, is repeating his day over and over again or his memories over and over again. It's kind of a good thing to watch this again and again just to pick up certain little details here and there about it, and I really enjoy that about this film very much.
Thanks.
Now, the flashbacks of Frank with his dad on life support, was that to show his like sustain or hatred of automatic systems while he's being kept alive, or was there something more?
Yeah, there was a lot in the subtext there. That's definitely, that was to really kind of set up a starting point of why, to understand why Frank was opposed to technology. Because of what happened, that he felt his father was kept alive longer than he should have been, that technology was abused in that, and it created a very painful time for him when he literally pulled the switch on his own father. So that event really kind of transcends into the story. Another big spoiler alert, but if you recall Frank having to go through that event again with Howard, having to make the decision whether or not to pull the plug on a life or a friendship that Frank had. So those were definitely it was something from Frank's past that started to run parallel with the current story. That's for sure.
Yeah, I gotta say, when Frank does decide to unplug the power on Howard, I got the same sort of chills when I first saw 2001: A Space Odyssey, when Dave is unplugging Hal.
Yeah, definitely inspiration from that. I mean, 2001 is Kubrick and 2001 is the ultimate sci-fi movie. So a lot of inspiration was taken from that movie. That's for sure.
But that was a really great job to have, you care about an artificial being as Howard was right there. So I gotta give kudos to you for that. Now, Travis, the show is called Cinema Recall on the site, thatmomentin.com, where we concentrate on specific moments in movies, all right? Now, my favorite moment of Infinity Chamber happens when Frank first escapes and you think he's getting out, and he goes to, I guess it's a gas station, and then he gets some water, he turns, and he sees the same group of photos he saw at the coffee shop, and he knows that it's a very false awakening.
I appreciate that you liking that moment in the movie. That's a huge one for me. But you're asking me,
what was your favorite moment in making this movie? Like, your favorite day going on the set? What was your favorite day on set making this movie? Or what was your favorite? What was the best moment you filmed of this movie? Like, what was your favorite?
Boy,
moment.
That's a tough one. There were so many. I mean, this movie, it took us a lot. We shot over a long period of time. We went to lots of different kind of exotic locations. So it's tough to say, because we shot out at El Mirage in the Mojave Desert. We shot up at the Continental Divide of the Rocky Mountains. We shot in Denver. We shot in Los Angeles and Canoga Park. So, I mean, we really traveled all over the place, but I'd probably, I think I'd have to say, I think it would, the moment that jumps out at me is when we were filming the finale between Frank and Howard. And we were in this little industrial space inside this prison cell that I'd spent a year to build. And we'd spent so much time and energy creating this world, this cell. And I do really clearly remember the day when Chris really, his performance was just amazing, but it was those final moments, that final argument he was having with Howard. And you have to remember, he's just arguing with this security camera that I painted and modified. And here he is yelling at this thing hanging from the middle of the room. But I just connected so much with what he was doing and what was happening in the story. And that really, like, for the biggest moment through production, I felt like I was really in that story and in that world. So it was probably that moment that stands out the most for me.
Was this the moment too where Frank is telling Howard, "You have to let me out. Your job is to keep me alive. You have to let me out there."
Yes. That was a really emotional moment. It was kind of the emotional peak of the story. So we saved that. We shot that near the end. I wanted us to have covered everything else and to save that towards the end. So we really, after all of our time spent in that prison cell when it was really hot in Los Angeles, and we struggled with AC, so we're all in this little box just sweating together, and him and Chris doing that performance, it really, really hit me. Like, wow, this is I really thought we had something, that something magical was happening at that moment. And I really had a lot of hope that maybe the movie would work because of what we were doing. So yeah, that definitely jumps out at me.
That was definitely a very, very powerful point or moment in that movie there.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I think that's going to wrap up my questions right there. I really don't have anything else to say except, where can people see this movie?
Well, it's available now. VOD, it's on Amazon and iTunes. So that's where it's at right now. We're going to see if we're going to expand to other platforms and to other places. But right now it is available online on iTunes and Amazon.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, Travis. Do you have any upcoming projects in the work?
Yeah, for sure. Always, I've got multiple projects that other scripts that I've written that other directors are trying to put together. And then I'm heading into doing another film this next year, hopefully in the spring or summer. So it's another sci-fi thriller. Similar to Infinity Chamber, but obviously going to try to tell a different kind of story in a different kind of way. Right. So, absolutely.
Is it more difficult trying to get like a screenplay written for like a studio versus like making an independent film, or are they both kind of the same?
They both have their challenges, that's for sure. Okay. It's not an easy task. Selling a script to a studio is really difficult just because it's extremely competitive. There's so much material, so many great writers, great scripts out there. So it's and especially when you're doing a studio project, it's a big investment, it's a big risk. So really all the moons have to align for you. Depending on, getting talent and getting directors and getting the right people and all those elements coming together. And then independent filmmaking is obviously equally has its challenges of starting with this idea and then getting people equally passionate about it, putting your little army together, trying to find financing. They're equally challenging. That's for sure. That's for sure.
Well, I definitely want to say thank you for being on the show here, Travis. Now, you can actually follow Travis Molloy and the Infinity Chamber by going to Twitter. Travis, do you mind if I share this with the audience?
Oh, no, please. Absolutely. Okay.
Travis can be found at Travis Molloy, where both the T and the M are capitalized. You can also look up more about the Infinity Chamber by going to Twitter at Somnio Movie. Both the S and the M are capitalized. And I want to say, is the website theinfinitychamber.com? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, it's without the. It's just infinitychamber.com. And you know, most people that have been is following our Facebook page. That's where a lot of the information is available. If anybody wants to know what's going on with the movie, if you just type in Infinity Chamber movie in Facebook, you'll find it.
All right. Well, again, Travis, thank you so much for being on the Cinema Recall podcast to spoil a few things about your story right there. I did mention before that there was going to be a few spoilers there, so I do hope that people do still check it out. All right, I think it is a very well-done science fiction film. We don't actually see science fiction films that make audiences think a little bit, and so I'm really kind of glad that you are continuing that trend.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I got to say, Vern, even with spoilers and whatnot, which, you know, is fine, the ongoing debate that I've been getting from fans and from people that are watching the movie is what the ending means.
So we could
just set that nugget out there for people. It does have an ending that's a little bit controversial, and it's been interesting talking to fans who very strongly believe one way versus another group of fans who believe the other way. And the argument's been going back and forth, and there's great evidence and clues to either side. But a lot of fans have been asking me what it really is. And I was like, well, I kind of want the audience to decide how they want to take that ending. So anyway, just to throw that out there.
You're not gonna do the whole Darren Aronofsky thing where he basically tells you what it means. You want us to decide for ourselves.
Yeah, I mean that's. I don't think it's really important what I think it is. It's how you want to decipher it, because there's two very different meanings to that ending. And I do, you know. So I just think it's been so interesting talking to people and how they take it, and they say, no, this is the way the movie ends, and here's why. And I think I'm like, that's great. I think that's wonderful that you feel strongly about it. And then arguing and then talking to people that feel the other way as well. So it's been an interesting, really interesting reaction about the ending from people that have watched the movie and connected with it.
Please check out our review on thatmomentin.com. Just search for Cinema Recall on there. We are on Twitter. We are at @cinema_recall. You can find us on Facebook. Just type in Cinema Recall. Our episodes are posted on Podomatic, Stitcher Radio, Player FM, iTunes, all that other great streaming sites for podcasts. But we want to say again, thank you for listening to the show. My big thanks to writer-director Travis Malloy for coming on here to talking to us about the Infinity Chamber. We'll be back hopefully next week or so with another episode of Terror Tuesdays. And I will say goodnight for now, everybody.
Thanks so much.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.